This is On the Couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your hosts, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
Well, welcome to episode 2 of On the Couch. It's Monday at 8 p.m. My name is Earl Bell.
And I'm Benny Massey, and you are on the couch.
Right. And today we are going to talk about something that people hear a lot of discussion related to, but many probably are not sure really what it is, and that's post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD.
And PTSD, many hear about it, but they usually affiliate it with military because it is experiencing or going through a traumatic event, seeing a death, a tragic death in front of you, or anything to that nature. But it also spans beyond military.
And I think also something to be aware of is that it doesn't necessarily have to be what most people consider traumatic, like a shooting, a killing, or anything like that. The trauma is pretty much based on how the person interprets it and the threat that they feel toward themselves as far as, you know, being diagnosed with PTSD.
Well, and I agree with you, but can you give our audience, our listeners, an example of another area where someone might be experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder where there isn't a murder?
Yes, sure. No problem, Benny. Back several years ago, there was a study done related to the 911 when the Trade Center was brought down. And the thing about it, at the time, there was 24/7 coverage. So people were tuning in to CNN, Fox, CBS, constantly watching the news stories related to the 9/11 tragedy. And the authors of the study from University of California, Irvine, suggested that 24/7 media coverage of traumatic events may exacerbate stressful reactions among those who are already vulnerable to post-traumatic stress disorder.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask you, can you not be present at the scene and still be affected?
I think you can, and I think the study helped relate that as well. However, they did say that the study did not demonstrate a cause and effect relationship between watching the news coverage and an actual PTSD diagnosis. But they did point out that even 3 years after the terrorist attacks, those who reported in the study watching the most coverage had the heaviest load of symptoms, you know, the intrusive thoughts, the nightmares, and anxiety triggered by cues with the incident and the physical symptoms, including sleep troubles and headaches. So in other words, the people who watched it on the news could still display symptoms, but they didn't display them enough to rise to the diagnosis of PTSD, according to this study. They do say, however, there needs to be a little more research done as well.
So if I hear you correctly, witnessing, even via television or not hearsay, but information coming from somewhere else, not being present at the actual scene, can still traumatize you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I think one thing as well that, and we can get into this a little more later on, one thing that is also prevalent among people who suffer from PTSD is when a traumatic event happens, they feel like they are being threatened, that their safety is threatened. And I think that's important to be aware of as well.
And I just want to chime in and let you all know we are accepting phone calls. If you would like to call in and ask a question or give us a comment, the number you will call is 917-889-3093. That's 917-889-3093, and we welcome your calls.
And one thing, Benny, speaking of PTSD, this past week brought about the 22nd anniversary of the Columbine School massacre. And I was listening to the principal speak about the whole events that led up to it. And afterwards, when the kids were coming back to school, they had planned a big celebration. It was 2 weeks later. The kids were returning to the school setting. They had balloons set up. And some of the balloons started popping. And the kids had a traumatic experience all over again. Can you speak to that?
It would seem to me that they would have planned for that and maybe prepared for that, because balloons pop. And that can simulate a gunshot or a fire. So it could be a traumatic event. It could be reigniting that traumatic event that they previously experienced.
And I think one thing that the principal said as well that was very interesting, and it goes to the depth of the feelings people have who suffer from PTSD. He even mentioned that when the kids came back to school, going to serve Chinese food in the lunchroom in the cafeteria anymore, because on the day of the massacre, they were having Chinese food, and they didn't feel like that would be appropriate, that it could re-trigger some of the feelings and emotions that the kids were having.
And those are some of the things also that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, are triggers. And there are triggers in all kinds of the disorders that we deal with, but especially post-traumatic stress disorder. So if you're doing a certain thing when an event occurs, it can revigorate that thought or bring it back to your mind to where you're back at that place again. And that is known as
being re-traumatized.
Re-traumatized, exactly.
And Benny, could you speak a little bit to what you just said? Because I find that very interesting, that being exposed to, we'll use the Chinese food as an example, after the event can take you back to that location or back to the event. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. I would just think anything that is related to that event, it could be something mute or something that you would think not related at all, but anything that you're doing when the situation occurs, it is still stored in your memory and it can still be pulled back up.
And I guess that's why when someone who's been through a traumatic event goes to see a therapist, I think it's important, and you can speak to this as well if you'd like, that the client not leave anything out. Even the smallest minute detail could be an important factor in the client getting the therapy and help they need to move on from the event and, you know, eventually heal from the PTSD.
And this is why it's important for you to open up to your therapist. And again, you have to find the right one, but to be able to share those intricacies with your therapist so that they can work on building that plan to further help you. And you might think the what you were doing prior to the event or during the event is something small or not noteworthy, but it very much is so.
Yeah, and you know, and that's like, I'm going to repeat this again because I find it so interesting that something that most people would look at as minor in a small detail, Chinese food in the cafeteria, would be a big enough deal to actually re-traumatize those kids if it's reintroduced to the kids too quick after the traumatic event. So, yeah. And like I say, I think it's real important if you go see a therapist and you've been through a trauma, to put it all out there, regardless of how minute you think the detail might be. And also, again, I want to let you guys know you're listening to On the Couch with Benny Massey and Earl Bell. Give us a call if you'd like to discuss this or if you have some input. Our number is 917-889-3093. That's 917-889-3093.
So we've talked about events that are pretty traumatic, like murder or war, things like that. But Earl, I want to ask you, do you think there are other events, other situations that might not rise to that level that could be PTSD diagnosable?
Well, I think so, Benny. And I think it's like we've said before, that kind of goes back to how the person perceives the event. If they perceive it as threatening to their life or family member or whomever, then obviously it could trigger the symptoms, you know, the fight or flight response of being around an event or the flashbacks, nightmares, those type things. So I think the important thing to remember when you go see your therapist again is that whatever the event is, don't think since you didn't witness a mass shooting or a mass killing like the one at Columbine that you can't be experiencing PTSD. I think it's important to put the symptoms out there and what triggers the symptoms and kind of go from there with your therapist.
Well, what if there's abuse in the home? What if you witness mom or dad hitting mom or mom hitting dad? And would you say that rises to that level?
And that's where, again, you'd have to take it on a case-by-case basis. If you're a child and obviously there's violence going on in the home, it's going to be difficult for you to feel safe. And again, as a child, the people who are supposed to take care of you, mom and dad, if they are fighting, then how are you going to feel safe? So, that could cause PTSD type symptoms within the child. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
I think one thing also in a recent study came out, and I haven't had a chance to look at it very close, but I will, is the fact that energy drinks, they're starting to look at the use of energy drinks in veterans along with the effects of that on their PTSD and on their symptoms. So, that's something else to explore. I think the thing about PTSD, it's really only been around as a diagnosis for, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 years. And realistically, that's kind of young for a disorder. And I think it's important to realize that we're really just kind of touching the surface at this point. And there's always going to be new research coming out as far as new therapies and new interventions to utilize.
And we kind of want to inform you of what PTSD or post-traumatic stress does to you. At the time of the incident or the situation, it's almost as if you lose total control. You have no control. So you don't know what's to come. You're fearful of what's to come. You feel like you cannot impact the situation, and you're hopeless and you're helpless. So it's in treatment, you want to work on regaining that control. And there are things that you can do in therapy that can help you to regain that and get you back on track.
Yeah, and I think that's important too, because a lot of people who have been through abuse or some type of traumatic event, a lot of times they aren't in control during the event. So a lot of times it's not just a perception of loss of control, but it's actual loss of control. So that's a great point, Benny. Thanks so much for making that. I want to bring your attention now. We have a clip here we're going to play by Dr. Barbara Rothbaum. She's the Director of Trauma and Anxiety Recovery Program at Emory University School of Medicine. She will answer three questions. What is PTSD, which we've touched on? What are the symptoms of PTSD? And can PTSD be treated? So after you listen to this, we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more and kind of expand on what she says and maybe take some calls. Our number is 917-889-3093. And here is Dr. Rothbaum.
PTSD is an anxiety disorder that arises from someone being exposed to a traumatic event, usually when they feel that their life is threatened or someone they love's life is threatened or that they're going to be seriously injured. There are three clusters of symptoms of PTSD. The first are the re-experiencing symptoms, so nightmares, flashbacks, intrusive thoughts. And this is really where I see that the person is haunted by it. It intrudes on their everyday life and they feel it. They feel it in their body. They feel it emotionally. The next cluster of symptoms are the avoidant symptoms. In general, people with PTSD don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to go anywhere that reminds them of it. And very often they will shut down emotionally and describe being emotionally numb. The third cluster of symptoms are the physical arousal symptoms. So that's where you see the problem sleeping, problems concentrating, irritability, all of these kinds of experiences that keep the person on edge, exaggerated startle responses, being hypervigilant. I always tell people when I give them a diagnosis of PTSD that I've got good news and bad news. The bad news is you have PTSD. And it's bad news because it's an awful disorder to have. It's an awful way to have to live your life. The good news is we do have good treatments, and we have several options for treatment. So we've got a couple of plan A's that even if one doesn't work, we've got other good alternatives. And I really believe I've seen people who told me, I don't know why I fought so hard to survive if this is my life now. And then they have said, after treatment, I feel like the person I was before this happened, and I didn't think that was possible. It doesn't happen for everybody, but I know that it's possible.
Okay, we're back live after listening to that clip by Dr. Rothbaum. Benny, what are some takeaways you get from what Dr. Rothbaum discussed as far as post-traumatic stress disorder and symptoms and treatment?
Well, we kind of explored the first cluster, which are the symptoms, and we talked about that a little bit. The second was the avoidance. That's what she deemed that cluster, avoidance. And in therapy, it's imperative, I believe, that you get to that point where you can discuss those areas that the client wants to avoid.
And I guess my thing to point out as well is what different symptoms avoidance looks like. What are the symptoms when you're experiencing avoidance looking like? A lot of times it can be something like staying away from places, events, or objects that are reminders of the experience. And I think the thing to take from that is, you know, if you're driving to work every day and there's an accident and it triggers you and you have the PTSD symptoms, you need to get to a point where you can go back to driving down the same road. Obviously, after that event happens, you may have to take a detour until you get to the point where that doesn't trigger you anymore. And I think another way of avoiding the symptom or the symptoms of avoidance are also avoiding thoughts or feelings related to the traumatic event.
Well, in addition, Earl, to what you're saying, we talked about on the first half of our little on the couch piece that it's important for you to converse with your therapist about all the small things, the details, the minute details. For example, the Chinese food. Because if you don't share that with your therapist, but you continue to eat Chinese food, you might continue to be traumatized and not realize why you're being traumatized. You've left that piece out. And the therapist needs to know that in order to help you progress.
Yeah, and besides eating the Chinese food, you might be avoiding the Chinese food. And that kind of falls into the category of avoidance as well, I think. And I think one thing also that Dr. Rothbaum mentioned was arousal and reactivity type symptoms. Some of those can be being easily startled. And I think the fact of that goes back to the fact that if you feel like your life is threatened, then of course you're going to startle a whole lot quicker.
And with that with the arousal piece, some of the symptoms that she mentioned was inability to sleep. Sleep is imperative. You need to sleep. And if you're not able to sleep because you're fearful you're going to have a nightmare or a flashback, we have to work on that to help you move past that. Because if you don't get the sleep that's necessary, you will not function the way you need to.
Well, Benny, let me ask you, we talked an awful lot about PTSD in general, mostly dealing with adult symptoms. Do children react differently to adults when it comes to PTSD?
I would say they don't. I would say it's the same, but I'm not sure. What do you think?
Well, I do think that sometimes the symptoms can be the same. I think you're correct. But I think it's also important for the therapist when they're working with a child to realize that applying the symptoms from an adult, you may find some. You're correct. There will be some that do overlap. But also, sometimes symptoms in children might be a little different than those in adults. You know, like a lot of times a child might start wetting the bed after being taught how to use the toilet, you know. And also, in extreme cases, there have been children who forget how or they're unable to even talk, you know. And I think one thing as well, going back to the sleep, can you tell me how that also will play itself out for children.
I think it could act out the scary events. It could make them have a fear of going in that realm of sleep. But what I wanted to point on with what you said they might act out differently if they've learned to use the restroom, use the toilet. They might start bedwetting. Again, that speaks to the diagnosis itself, lack of control, lack of ability to function. And this is why this disorder is something that is severe and that it's definitely treatable, but it is a serious disorder that we need to look at and work on.
And that's why I think, again, I want to reiterate, if you're experiencing these symptoms, go talk to a therapist. And also, one question that a lot of people ask, and Benny and myself were sitting here, what if Benny experienced the same event as I did, but Benny didn't develop PTSD? And I think the thing that's really important to remember is that not everyone who lives through a dangerous event will develop PTSD. In fact, most people will not develop the disorder at all, because there are many factors that play a part in whether a person will develop the PTSD. You know, the risk factors that make more likely to develop PTSD are kind of like living through dangerous events and traumas.
I agree with that. I think we both can see the same thing, but experience it differently. I think it probably plays on our past experiences, our lives, and what we've gone through in that time. That said, if an event is tragic, it probably will affect you, and you probably will need to process it and deal with it. And you might can do that with a friend or family member or someone you trust. But just know that there are professionals, like Earl and I, who are here. In addition, there are many professionals who can help you through this process.
Right. And I think one thing also that can help reduce the risk of developing PTSD is, like Benny said, sometimes maybe you just need a friend to talk to and tell them what happened. And that can help as well. But there are support groups as well in most communities. After a traumatic event happens, churches will open their doors and community centers will open for people to come in a lot of time and just kind of process what happened. And I think reaching out to other people, even laypersons, can help you work through it as well, because a lot of times, and Benny touched on the feelings of loss of control, a lot of times, if you can see that other people are experiencing what you're experiencing, feeling what you're feeling, and thinking what you're thinking, it can help you feel a little more in control to realize that you're not the only one out there going through this. So, yeah, I think that's real important. And one thing that's easier said than done is having a positive coping strategy to get through an event like this, because most people really don't plan on a traumatic event, because you really can't. That's what makes them, you know, difficult to get through.
And coping strategies are very important. It's kind of what we try to help our clients develop throughout. Despite the disorder that they're dealing with, PTSD, depressive disorder, you name it, we want to help our clients develop healthy coping strategies. And one way that we do that is we query them. It's important for us to get their coping strategies, or what helps them to de-escalate, or what helps them to relax, because we can give them what helps ourselves, but that probably isn't pertinent to the client.
Yeah, and I think it's important to also mention that the main treatment for people with PTSD basically is psychotherapy, otherwise known as talk therapy. Like Benny said, you know, talking to the therapist, you know, putting it all out there, and even exploring the coping skills and mechanisms that you already have in place. And if necessary, medication can also be used. But I think it's important to remember that everyone is different, and PTSD does affect people differently. So one therapy might work for your neighbor who's been through a traumatic event with you, and it might not work for you. So it's important that you seek out a mental health provider who's experienced with PTSD.
And Earl just spoke about medication, and I think probably for PTSD initially, it's very imperative. But I'm a firm believer that psychotherapy, talk therapy is key. It's one of the avenues that is rarely used. People want to find a pill that fixes everything. And sometimes we have to just deal and face our fears and process it and come up with strategies to better handle it in the future. So I'm not discounting psychiatry. Psychiatry is very important, but talk therapy, psychotherapy, is also an avenue that is very helpful.
Yeah, and usually it's safe to say that, you know, talk therapy treatment usually lasts 6 to 12 weeks. But I think the important thing to remember is that's just a general statement. It can last longer, or it can be cured or taken care of a lot quicker. But the research also shows that family and friends play an important part in the client's recovery from PTSD. So I think it's real important to keep all this in mind and, you know, look forward instead of looking backward as you move through the therapeutic process. And hopefully your therapist will help you.
Absolutely. And if you feel like you might have been traumatized or you might be experiencing PTSD or have that diagnosis, please don't hesitate to seek out a therapist. You have to find the right one. You have to find the right one for you. And we will, in future podcasts, talk about therapists and different techniques that you might that might help you better locate what you're looking for.
Yeah, and I think that's important too, Benny. And that's one thing I tell my clients, I'm sure you do as well. If a client comes to me and they're not feeling like they are getting anything out of it, I encourage the client to let me know. Don't just keep coming and sitting there, you know, going through the motions. But I want to encourage anyone who goes to see a therapist, if you're not feeling that connection with the therapist, let them know. And as a professional, they can help you find another therapist who may work for you.
Absolutely. So to review what we talked about so far, there are three clusters. The actual event, and the second one is the avoidance, and the third one is the physical symptoms. And we want to help you all. Hopefully this podcast is giving you information on what you need to do in order to treat yourself, help yourself. Again, we're not saying you need a therapist. You might need some. I would definitely say you need someone to talk to and share with. But therapy is a profession that is very well recognized and important, and it's a good thing.
And I think I want to say this one last thing before we close out. I think it's important to also, if you've been through a traumatic event with a group of people and you're doing well with it, keep an eye on those around you. They may be struggling and not really realize how much. And I think it's important to take care of your friends and neighbors who have been through the event. Maybe reach out and say, hey, you look like you're struggling a little bit after the event. Why don't you go seek a therapist or go seek someone to talk to, and look out for your friends and neighbors.
So, I'm Benny Massey, LPCC.
And I'm Earl Bell, LCSW.
And you're on the couch. And
this
we want to
end on the couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your hosts, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.